My name is Jewel Lee Muller. I'm a junior here at Michigan State, and I'm in education. My home is Connecticut, in Storrs, Connecticut. I live at 209 River Street, East Lansing.
What questions here interest you?
The first ones interest me. The ones on
your
background.
Should we start with that? What are your dreams? What were your dreams when you entered college?
Sure.
What were they?
Well, when I entered college because I felt I had to. I wanted to, but growing up, I never thought of not going to college. And
why?
Well, I'm the fourth generation in my family going to college, so it was just assumed I'd go. You know, that was always talked about, which was fine. I didn't feel pressured because I wanted to go, too. But going to college has a lot of pressures on itself. I enter college hoping to find a career that I'd really like. I wasn't sure what I'd want to go into. Meeting lots of people, doing different things. I didn't go in hoping to go in and find a job to make me a millionaire, or money wasn't a concern to me, really. I didn't know exactly what I wanted, I don't think. I would think I was looking for a direction in itself.
Didn't you ever want to be something specific?
I changed.
As a little girl, didn't you want to be an astronaut or a nurse or something?
I changed a lot. I think I really wanted to be a lawyer for a long time, and there was, when I had said that for years, it's still talked about, don't you want to be a lawyer? And not anymore.
Where did that come from?
I thought I wanted to be a lawyer. I thought I wanted to be a lawyer who worked with children and battered women and things like that. Just it was my own idea, a lot younger. I was a lot younger.
Somebody in your family a lawyer?
No. I don't know how it came up.
Watching a TV series?
It might have been. I think it seemed exciting. And I think the older I get, I realize it's a lot of work, but I don't know if it doesn't seem so exciting to me anymore, you know.
Why? What made you realize you didn't want to be a lawyer?
I don't think I'm an aggressive enough person, for one thing. I think it maybe scared me a little bit, the thought of going out there and having to be so forceful and convince people. I mean, I'm not, I can be aggressive when I really want to be or need to be, but I don't think it's something I want to do all the time. It just didn't appeal to me anymore.
Are you saying to me that all lawyers must be aggressive?
No, but I think if you're going into court and you're trying to win a case, you have to be. Or you have to appeal to the jury, and so then in a sense you do have to be aggressive. I don't mean like overly, you know, terrible or anything like that.
Is this based on an assumption that most lawyers work in court?
Yeah, probably. But yet I know they don't. There's so many different kinds of lawyers that it wasn't something I don't think I gave a lot of thought to. I think it was just kind of something that sounded good and looked good, maybe.
You see, one of the things which keeps coming up in these interviews, I get a response from people who say that they have rejected X, Y, or Z because of, and then the reason they give me is not based on an objective and evaluation of the vocation. It's almost a flitting from one subject to the next for no really rational reason.
Well, I think that I wanted to be a lawyer just the same way when growing up I wanted to be a firewoman, I wanted to be a ranger and a movie star. You do all those, you get these ideas and you don't really think about them a lot.
So when is someone capable of making a judgment about what they really want to be?
See, that's the thing. I think so many people are changing their professions now because they go into college and they get a degree, or they don't even go to college and they start out in something and they don't like it anymore. And I think that you don't know. I mean, I don't know that what I'm doing is for sure, that I'll like it forever.
So is this pattern of high school, college, job, marriage, is that right? I mean, what are the alternatives?
Well, I think it's a pattern. If you want to do that, that's fine. But I think that if you want to change your profession, if you want to go back to school, if you don't want to get married, then I think that's all right, because I don't think that it's fair to be locked into some idealistic pattern that might not be right for you. It's not right for everybody. And I think that's changing, that's what not everybody's doing.
Do you think you will change your vocation several times in your life?
I hope I don't several times, but there's a possibility that I might.
You know what the average is?
Four
to five times.
45 times?
4 to 5 times.
Oh, I believe it.
Yeah.
That seems like a lot,
There's
though.
Another statistic, and that is that 10 years out of college, only 20% of those college graduates are working in a field related to their major.
10%?
20%. About 20%.
Wow. But when I
just learned that recently. I was absolutely overwhelmed by that. Yeah. I couldn't believe that, based on a Harvard study.
But when I see people, people that I know that have graduated, or, you know, other people, other adults, older adults even in my life, they've changed. You know, and I don't, and a lot of them, when I find out what their degree is in, I'm amazed. They have nothing to do with what they're doing. It's true.
So, talk a little bit about how you zeroed in on education, why you think that is a viable choice now.
Well, I started out in advertising, and it just didn't appeal to me. I took lots of courses in it. But one summer, or several summers, I've been a camp counselor, and I love children. I've been a Sunday school teacher, been a camp counselor, I've done all kinds of babysitting, and I like children a lot. After being a camp counselor and being a director of a program, I was responsible for several children and counselors, and I enjoyed it a lot, and it sort of gave me a direction, and so far I'm very happy in it. I really enjoy it. I've done volunteer work with children learning disabilities, and so far everything I've been interested in.
So you like working with people?
And people, yeah, a lot, I do.
Well, beyond having a general interest in people, have you ever had broader aspirations, a Mother Teresa approach to the world, where you wanted to go out and somehow save humanity, to really jump off the deep end, to go to India to work with the starving people, the people who have nothing?
I'm still thinking about it, but I've thought often about going into the Peace Corps. And I know you have to go in for 2 years, and I think that's one of the reasons why I'm thinking of not doing it. But it's something I'd really like to do, to go and, I don't know, and teach, maybe start out doing that. Or helping? Or are you looking for something like changing the world? That's what you're looking for?
Well, felt that, I'm interested in hearing about it.
I can't really think of anything that... I don't think so. I've always thought it would be great to have a woman president, but not... I don't think that's me.
Where did this feeling of wanting to go into the Peace Corps come from? I mean, can you look back... Can you look at your family background, where you went to school, and look at all of your various influences, and based on your evaluation of those things, say, this is why I am the way I am?
I've grown up in a very loving, caring, giving family, and I think that I've always wanted to give that back, give something. I'm a giving person, and I don't look at it as charitable at all. I do lots of volunteer work, and I'm involved in a lot of different groups, like through my church, where we work with the poor citizens in our community, and I enjoy doing things like that, because I think it makes me feel good, but also I feel like I'm really doing something worthwhile, and I'm helping somebody do something that they need, you know, whether it's helping them learn to read, or if it's giving them food to eat, or giving them clothing. I think it's just something I've done for a long time, and I enjoy it.
Gives you pleasure.
Yeah. Well, and it helps. Makes me feel good to know that they're getting something out of it. You know, I mean, that I'm helping them. And a lot of times they help me in return in different ways.
How do they help you?
Oh, they help me learn how to approach something differently, or...
Can you give an example?
Well, I've taught different people how to read, and some people are very difficult, and they'll tell me what I'm doing wrong or if I approach them in the wrong way, so that next time I know, or it gives me a different alternative. Other than that, I can't think of anything right now.
But is it ultimately a feeling that you are helping other people that really motivates you? I mean, I've worked with other people. I get frustrated. I used to work as a social investigator on the Bowery, and I got horribly frustrated doing that because I felt that what I did wasn't really helping.
Worthy. So you're asking me if I feel like I'm doing it because I'm helping them?
Yeah, what ultimately, at the end of the day, you feel good about something Now, does this have a religious root? Are you viewing this in a traditional Christian context of performing the compassionate deed, doing something to help others? Is there a root there, or what? Some people feel an obligation to go paint all day, a very egocentric activity, by comparison to helping others. But you get the pleasure from helping others in some way, and I'm not quite sure I understand why.
Well, I like doing things through my church, but that's not, it's not, I don't think it's a Christian thing so much. I think probably my mother and I are very much alike, and she's into these kinds of things, and I think that it's rubbed off on me. And I think that's probably where she was the person who started me out in a lot of different programs that I volunteer in, and I see how much pleasure it gives her and how much she enjoys it, and I think I in turn enjoy it too. I mean, knowing that, how can I explain this?
So we're really nothing more than reflections of our parents on
I
some
guess,
level.
yeah, some.
Are we free? If we're only reflections of our parents, if we're only following a
Given
model
root.
that we've grown up with, are we really making free choices?
Well, I think it depends. It depends on how close you are to your parents, or how much you care what they think about what you're doing. I mean, some people don't at all, and some people, that's all they worry about. So I think that if that's all you worry about, then no, you're not, because you're lots of times maybe doing things that aren't for yourself.
We're getting way off on a philosophic tack, which is fascinating, but I really need to zero in on some of the basic problems, maybe you didn't have any, that you had adjusting to college. In high school you had one perception of yourself based on contact with peers, et cetera, et cetera. Then you come to a huge university. I presume you came right to Michigan State. And that must have involved an adjustment. Could you talk a little bit about that change?
Well, for me, I left a community where I knew most of the people, and I knew almost everybody in my high school because I left a rather small high school. And to come to a university like this, not only did I just come to a large university, I came so far from home where I didn't know anybody. So I had to get to know, I had to make all new friends, and I had to orient myself with this huge university on my own, and pretty much. I mean, I flew out here by myself, everything. And I think for me that was a big adjustment because I had to do everything on my own, which was, I think, good. Also, I had to, essentially, you have to take care of yourself. If you want to get something done, I had to do it. I think for me that was the hardest part, leaving all my security and going somewhere where there was none.
Can you talk a little bit about that first year in the dorm, your roommates and that sort of thing?
I feel lucky because I lived in a dorm where we had suites, and I had two roommates. I was tripled, so our rooms are tiny, and then there was three of us living in there. But I got along with both of my roommates, and then I got along with both of my suite mates. So the five of us were all close, and we got along very well. So I feel lucky. Being tripled is not an easy experience, especially if you don't like the people you're living with, because you still run into being cramped and not having any privacy. But the freshman year in your dorm, I think most freshmen, and I know I was one of them, it was your first real freedom. And you go use it to the full extent, I think, in the beginning at least.
Can you discuss how you use that freedom? You don't have to give me all the gory details, but
You go out late, you stay out late, you don't have to worry about coming home. My mother always waited up for me, so I didn't have anybody waiting up for me, and I'd have to feel guilty if I came home too late. I think that's when I started drinking, you know. I mean, that's when I first was exposed to it, really.
there was no drinking in your home?
No. Very,
All right,
very
suddenly
little.
here you are at this huge university. They're drinking all up and down the hall, going out on parties. You have this tremendous freedom. How in the world do you handle that?
Well, one of my roommates and the other two, my two suite mates, were a year older than me, so they'd been there for a year, and so I met lots of people through them. So I knew people then pretty fast. I never really enjoyed a whole lot being in the dorm myself. So how did I handle handle that? I was a typical freshman for the like the first month. I mean,
what
studying.
What is a typical freshman? That's an excellent question.
Okay.
I don't mean to compliment myself, but I mean, you tell
no.
me. What is a typical freshman? Give me the good and the bad, the ugly.
A typical freshman is someone. I think you're pretty much just thinking about yourself and what you're doing. You're out partying all the time. School is not your main concern, at least in the beginning. You're there meeting people, going out to parties, not studying, and then it hits you.
Are you a slob? I mean, do you?
No.
Your mother always made you hang your clothes up, or some.
I'm not at all, though. That for me, I'm not.
No, I didn't mean to ask that you were.
Oh,
slob.
You mean for
freshmen? I'm talking about the typical freshman.
I think maybe, you know, they're just throwing their garbage around. Like the halls are a mess. Usually, where the more freshmen are, the halls are really bad. People don't care. They just throw their garbage out in the hall. I think it's a very selfish time, I think, in all respects. I think you're just thinking about yourself and like that, throwing garbage in the hall. You're not thinking about other people having to walk in it or that you have a lot of selfish roommates who, like you say, are being slobs and they don't care about what their roommate thinks.
Now, was this co-ed? Was one side of the hall male
mm-hmm.
and the other?
Yeah.
On the other side of the elevator, women or something.
Mm-hmm. I think.
Now, did they mix, intermix freely? I mean, were the guys always coming over to the girls' rooms?
Yeah, people do. And you run into a lot of people who are. That's their first time that they. Well, guys will be over all the time in some girls' rooms, and girls get tagged on the floor as being the sleazes or the, you know, because they'll have a guy in there every night. And I think for a lot of times that happens in the beginning of their freshman year because that's, like I said, the first time they have freedom. And I don't know how many parents are going to let girls have guys just come over to their house. And I feel fortunate myself that I didn't have any roommates like that because that's another thing, selfishness to your roommate because, that was an uncomfortable position if a roommate walks in on that, walks in into your on a roommate with a guy or vice versa, and it just I don't know. I think a lot of girls that's where a lot of girls run into a problem with another girl is when they start bringing guys in the room and they don't know.
Yeah.
And that happens a lot in freshmen.
Well, you seem to suggest that this is just like a rite of passage. They go through this and then perhaps grow out of it.
I'm not saying it's right at all, and a lot of them don't grow out of it. That's a scary thing. I mean, there are so many alcoholics on this campus, it's not even funny, and that, to me, is scary. People that I know that are like that are...
What percentage of the freshman class do you have?
I lived
any
on a,
idea?
Well, as a sophomore last year, I lived on a floor which was almost all freshmen, and it was, for me, it was looking in retrospect at like what my floor must have been a freshman year. I hated living on that floor. But I would say on that one floor, at least 25% of the girls drank 5 or 6 nights a week. And when I mean drank, they didn't have a drink. I mean, they got just
where are they getting the money from?
Some work. Some people's parents just put money in account and all they have to do is take out of it. You'd be surprised how many are like that. And a lot of them, I think, are just, they don't even think about it. They just...
Why did you come to Michigan State?
Did I come?
Why didn't you go to an East Coast school?
I applied to several schools. I applied to 12 schools. I could not make my mind up. And I got accepted to all of them. So that didn't help me at all. I had to make my decision again. I wanted a large school, something different. I like the Midwest. Lots of my family is out in this area. Not in Michigan, but the Midwest. And I just wanted to change. I liked it. I'd seen it, and I liked it.
Yeah. Well, I thought of something. Well, did you... get into any horrendous water fights? I mean, where the whole floor just erupts after exams or before exams or something. Just crazy times. If so, can you describe them?
At the end of my freshman year, we had a huge water fight with water balloons. Everybody did. And everybody got drenched. The halls, the floors, the carpet, everything. It was fun. But I think afterwards when you looked at it, then people came out with shaving cream. And.
Can you describe how... specifically you were involved with this?
Because I was in my room studying. It was like the last day of finals weekend. Most people don't have finals on Friday. I did. and I had my door open. I was just studying because it's so hot in the dorms. You want all the circulation you get. And somebody came in and threw a water balloon at me. So I was in it. You know, I came back out, and I had to get the person who got me. And then
How'd you get them? I sort of got involved.
I got a glass of water because I didn't have any balloons. I mean, I hadn't originally been part of it at all.
How long did this go on?
I bet it lasted for like 20 minutes. Yeah. I was just involved like probably the last couple minutes of it because I wasn't in the beginning of it at all.
Did you consider yourself a winner or?
I didn't really think about it because I pretty much just got, I think at that point everybody just was getting wet just to get wet.
Yeah.
You know.
Did you pass your final?
Mm-hmm. But that's when I had to stop. I couldn't just be so carefree anymore because my grades were reflecting it. And I just, for me, I couldn't do that anymore.
Did your grades drop freshman year as opposed to your last year of high school?
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm.
Talk a little bit about that. Whether it was a different level of competition, whether it was just all of this freedom you had, all the factors that caused your average to drop.
Well, I think, first of all, college and high school are so different because in high school you've got somebody telling you when things are due, and if you don't understand something, they'll come to you and say, we need to get together and discuss this. Whereas in college, if you don't understand something, it's up to you completely. It's up to you to study. It's up to you to know what you don't know, to go to see your professor. They're not going to come to you. I think... three out of my four classes my first term of college were on a video monitor. So it wasn't even that you had a person talking to you. You watched TV. And that, for me, was a big adjustment. I always went to my classes. I didn't skip them. But I didn't pay attention as much as I should have. And I didn't quite know how to study all this vast amount of material that was being thrown at me all of a sudden. You didn't have people to go over it as much. In the high school, they just go through everything step by step.
So how did you make that adjustment? Specifically, what did you do?
My first term, I did all right. I didn't do well. I didn't do terribly. I just did all right. My second term, I talked to other people that were older than me, been in school a couple years, asked them for advice. My mother gave me advice. I started doing my homework before. It was like doing my reading on time. Or just keeping up with it. I made a big effort to do that. I don't think I really learned how to study, though, till last year. My whole freshman year, I don't think was
What do you mean by learning how to study, specifically? There are a lot of components to studying. Where do you think that you were lacking? An inability to do what?
I think I would save everything up till too late. I think that was my biggest problem. The night before, I try to study, and that doesn't work. That I think for me, the night before is the night to review, but studying I need to do before the night before. So
is that the way you did it in high school?
Wait
until the night before.
Pretty much, and I always did really well, you know. But it's.
Are you telling me high school wasn't really enough of a challenge?
No, I don't. I don't think so. I think that.
Now hold it. If you can get good grades in high school. By waiting to the night before and still do very well, how can it be a challenge?
Well, I think that if college...
Do you understand my question?
Mm-hmm. I suppose high school wasn't completely easy for me because I took... My high school is like a junior college because it's owned by the University of Connecticut.
Mm-hmm.
And we had a lot of teachers that were professors. But I guess for me, high school was not a real challenge, I guess.
Wasn't it terribly good high school then? Or do you say to me that even at the high school level, it is up to the individual to find his own way?
I think that's what I'm saying.
That on the...
Yeah, I think that's a better way to look at it. I don't think that it was a waste at all. I think that, I don't know why, for me it was just easier. And now I'm starting to get my feet settled in college, and I'm finding it much easier for me. I'm not struggling like I was, or I'm not frantic.
Did you know how to read quickly and selectively in high school? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Somebody gives you a text and you're responsible for 15 chapters of it,
mm-hmm.
and you know what the emphasis of the professor is. Now in high school, could you quickly and efficiently pick out the important elements and commit them to memory, or is that something you learn later? Can you talk
I
about
could.
that?
I could in certain subjects. Subjects that really interested me, such as English or science or history. I really liked those a lot, and I could. We had a lot of reading for high school. We had a lot of reading in those. And I could do that. I could pick out keywords, and then I'd kind of read, and I always was prepared. And I find I can do that. It's the same thing. In subjects I enjoy, I can do that. Where subjects I don't like, I usually have to read thoroughly. I don't know why that is, but but I do know what you mean about reading selectively, skimming it and picking out important things.
Yeah.
Professor or your teacher really wants, because you have them for a full year. Or you know them better as people than you know your professor for one term.
Well, anyway, you were describing that the adjustment that you were making from high school to college on an academic level. But could you comment a little bit about the fact that most people seem to be making more of a social adjustment than an academic adjustment? Or what? How would you weight those two? I mean, obviously kids are adjusting at both levels. But based on your contact with freshmen here, would you say that most of them really have their major problems on a social level or on an academic level or what?
I don't think that the social element is a problem in them. It can be a problem because that can become the number one focus, I think. But I think that the academic part is the hardest part for them. They get so absorbed in having fun often. I'm not saying everybody, because there's always people that aren't. But I think it's that first term that's the case for most. It can stay. Some people all the way through college are like that.
Well, it is a social problem then, isn't it?
Well,
I mean, they are being distracted endlessly by parties and and so forth. They don't have the discipline to concentrate on the academics.
Right. And there are lots of people like that. I'm sorry. I sort of forgot what you were asking me.
It's not important. Let me see. To the vantage point. Now, I mean, here you are among 10,000 other sophomores or your junior,
mm-hmm.
right?
Right.
And you're all absorbing this huge quantity of material, but are you really relating it to something which you feel strongly about on some personal level? The engineering student may have his mind set on absorbing a lot of technical material so that eventually he can get a good engineering job and make money and so forth. But is this being internalized in some way? Do you know what comment is being made here by Maritain?
From what you're saying,
you ever feel overwhelmed by the quantity of material that's being thrown at you?
Oh, definitely. And I think that
can you talk a little bit about that?
Well, it says here about cramming young people with chaos of summarized adult notions, and I think that a lot of the material that you learn, you memorize it, and you forget it. And because I find that a lot of it, especially the general education courses, I remembered through the term and maybe through the year because they were sequential, but after that they were gone because they didn't relate to anything, absolutely nothing. They were just requirements you had to have.
So what good is it?
I always ask myself that. I don't know. I don't understand that. I think things like humanities, for me, they were beneficial because it gave me a different cultural perspective that I hadn't had before, and I personally felt that was valuable. But looking at the different social science courses I had, they didn't do a thing for me. Absolutely nothing. I mean, I didn't learn anything from those. Very little.
How about the courses where there are 200 students looking at 5 monitors? I mean, where you have
those
a huge
video
class.
Ones?
Yeah.
I think those are the worst. Absolute worst. Because not only can you not focus on a person and understand what they're saying, you're watching a TV screen. And I think TV tends to make you kind of tune out anyway, and then you're watching that. I've never felt like most of those courses ever had a direction or they related to anything, personally.
So overall, what percentage of the courses that you've taken are ones that have been inspiring to you on some level?
Maybe 25%.
And out of that 25%, how many professors were really inspirational? I mean,
probably about the same amount.
So what you're saying then is that about 10% of the courses to you here are really good. Is that right?
No, usually for me I have one class a term that I thoroughly enjoy or feel that it's great. So that's why I say 25%. Well, last year on my floor, we had there were drug problems. There was a girl that was selling cocaine out of a room, and that made us all feel kind of uncomfortable. Not everybody knew. That's the thing. I mean, not everybody could know, because then of course she's going to have problems. You just kind of found out, or you suspect. You had kind of strange people walking down the hall sometimes. People that were obviously not students. They were older, and then there were a lot of people that just didn't belong in the hall that were coming down there, to buy from her. And she sold for most of the year out of her room. I don't know everything for sure, but it was kind of just known, because people would go down there. And it made us uncomfortable to know that here were these strange people coming in and out of the hall sometimes. It made me uncomfortable. I didn't like that, going all right down the hall. It makes you feel a little bit insecure and kind of unsafe, too.
Why didn't you report this to the RA or to the person running the residence hall?
Well, for one thing, it wasn't something that I knew for sure. I was pretty sure about it. But for another thing, last year in the hall, in my hall particularly, they were so lax on taking care of things that have been reported. My suitemate was the RA, and things just, when they bust kegs, the RN, the resident, or the RD,
when
the resident.
What?
When they
kegs?
Bust kegs.
What's that mean?
When they were, somebody, they get caught with a keg in their room, and when an RA goes and tells them they have to get out, and they write them up, and then they submit this written up document to the resident director of the hall, and they're supposed to take the course of action. If they're supposed to turn them into the judiciary board, I think, for the first offense and the second offense. I'm not sure all the things, but they were so lax and so slow on taking care of the things like that, that she had enough problems on the floor with the girls that I think she didn't want, unless there was a major problem, unless something had really happened, I don't think she wanted to get involved with it so that other people would get, I don't really know why. I'm not sure.
Are you telling me that you feel that the discipline is too lax in the dorms?
Yeah, I think so.
Can you say that so that it's not just included in my question? In other words, say I feel that the discipline is too.
I feel that discipline is too lax, because anybody can just walk in and out during the entire day. You don't need any sort of pass to get in. People walk in with just cases. They'll walk in with just cases of beer in and out the doors. I don't know if anybody could ever stand there and make sure these people are old enough or not, but you run into a lot of problems. I mean, there's violence with all this drinking. There's things getting broken, and then we have to pay for them. Things are always being damaged, and that they didn't put computers in Holden because Holden has such a high rate of damage and negligence.
Did you ever see any fights break out in the hallways?
Oh, all the time.
Describe one.
On the brother floor, even guys that are friends all the time, you know, they'll get in a fight over a girl, or they'll get in a fight over somebody stole somebody's beer, or somebody stole somebody's book. And the next thing you know, they're just going at it, hitting the walls. Lots of times there'll be blood on the walls from fights or people getting hurt or...
Not the girls. The girls aren't fighting physically, are they?
No. No.
That's more of a male thing.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely a male thing.
Yes.
You think that's... what is it? The testosterone level? What's going on there? Why do men fight like that?
I don't know. I really don't know. Mm-hmm. I think when girls fight, you're considered just an awful. I think when a girl who fights a lot, you know, like cat fights, I think they consider those girls to be just too tough. And
by a cat fight, you mean a physical fight?
Yeah, when two girls fight.
You ever seen that?
Mm-hmm.
On campus?
I remember it in high school a couple times. I've seen it like at different clubs around here sometimes. It all seems to happen when people drink. You know, that's when you see these things. Like on Friday and Saturday nights is when the guys would mainly have the fights in the halls, you know.
Do you consider yourself a tough person?
Like if I got in a fight, that kind of tough?
No, just not necessarily. I don't mean whether you could hold your own in a wrestling match or something like that. I mean more on the level of here you are exposed to everything. You're exposed to a certain amount of drugs. You're exposed to a certain amount of fighting, drinking. And a lot of people might be ultra sensitive to that.
I don't like it.
How do you take all that?
I don't like it at all. And I prefer not to be around people like that at all. I prefer it. But I don't know. I've had so much responsibility in my life, and I think I can just deal with it. But it's not something I like to be around specifically.
Do you have any bias on an ethnic level? I mean, I don't know what kind of a high school that you went to, but I don't know what mixture there were of blacks or Hispanics or anything like that. But was that when you came to Michigan State and were perhaps exposed to more foreign students, more blacks, et cetera, maybe less, I don't know. Can you talk about that?
I grew up in a town where there were, it was pretty much a white community. There weren't, we had very few blacks, but there was no prejudice at all, at all. And coming here, I'm exposed to more blacks. I don't really have too many, I haven't had too many problems with them. Except for last year, we had a, they used to have a, the black sorority and fraternity dances in our dorm, and I was a desk receptionist, and I had to close up one night at midnight, and there's nobody really in the halls at that time. In the main halls, well, there usually are, but for some reason that night there weren't, and I had to bring the cash box around. And I was severely, I would not severely, but I was definitely harassed for a long time by this black fraternity. I was the only white person around,
How were
and
you harassed?
they wouldn't let me through the hall. And they were all like, people were kicking and shoving, and all the names that, you know, derogatory names that blacks call whites. You know, whites have names for blacks too. But, and that's, I was scared because I was stuck there. There, the hall was full of people, and they wouldn't let me through. They were all these black people would not let me through, and that was scary, very scary. They finally let me through, but you know, all kind of things go through your mind, and you're wondering if I'm gonna get out of there. And that was my first real negative experience with any sort of ethnic
Yeah.
thing.
One part of something that I'd recorded earlier, which I'd like to get on tape again, was you made some comments about your generally being an optimist. I was saying that if you picked this transcript up 10 years from now and looked at it, what would you like to see? Or what would you like to read? Or
Well, I'm generally an optimist, and most things I feel I'm an optimist about the future, and I try to always see the good things in things. Even when things seem to be terrible, I really try to focus on something good so that I don't get too down or too pessimistic or negative about things. And being around negative people all the time, I don't like that. I just feel like it's worthless because how can you ever be happy if you always find fault in things? And I hope that when I, in the future, in 10 years or 20 years, that I can still be optimistic about things. I feel now that I'm generally happy. I'm a happy person, and I hope that I will be able to say that or feel that way later too.
sounds like you had a happy childhood. Where did all this optimism come from?
I don't know. I really don't. My childhood was difficult. My father died when I was younger, and that wasn't easy at all.
Put a terrible burden on your mother, huh?
And I when she had to, when she had to start working, I pretty much had to worry about my brother and sister, and so I, in a sense, became like a second parent, and that's why I was always given so much responsibility. I mean, at 10 years old, I was having to pretty much, I mean, she, my mother wasn't at work all the time or anything, but when she wasn't there and I was, I had to be the one in charge.
Do you feel shortchanged in the sense that you didn't have a childhood which was more carefree, a one which had less responsibility?
No, I don't really, because there's nothing I could do to change it, and I try not to ever think like that, because I think sometimes I look at people and I realize they don't, when they complain about something so trivial, I, in my own mind, I'm thinking they have no idea, you know, what real, you know, what real hardship is. They have no idea, and that comes later for a lot of people. Sometimes I look at my, like my sister now, she's 16, and the things that she can do that I couldn't do, sometimes I feel a little bit, I guess envious of it, but not really. I mean, I'm happy for her too.
Is there any one event or any one experience that you've had that has swung your life around? Anything that's happened to you here at the university which has made you focus a little bit better? Or from your description of things, it's almost as if your optimism has carried you through life very effectively for a long time. And so there have been no major turning points. Is that right?
Since I've come to school?
Or earlier. Can you look at any major turning point in terms of a strong personality you've encountered or a course you've taken, or maybe you have not?
If you, I don't know if you
Well, on, over on page 3, there's a question related to the Division of Student Affairs prepared the student profile and asked these students whether they needed improvement in one of those four areas, the ability to blah, 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 blah. And approximately 50% of the students said they needed no improvement in these areas. What is your reaction to that?
Well, I think that that would mean that one out of every two people thinks that they are fine in these specific areas. And out of the most people I know, I don't think that could be possible. I mean, we're 20 years old, or at the most 22. How do they feel that they know how to? I mean, so many people need help just to listen to others. And so many people don't know how to even get along with others. I don't understand how 50% could say they don't need any improvement.
Well, that's precisely the reaction I had. So I said to myself, what's going on here? Is it that I just don't understand the current generation in college? Are they answering the question by saying what they think they ought to be as opposed to what they are in fact? What is this?
Or maybe what they like to be. And they,
yeah, what they like to be.
And the ability to maintain lasting relationships. That one amazes me that 50% say they can. They don't need any improvement.
Most adults don't even have lasting relationships.
When I first read that question, that one I was pretty shocked about.
Well, were these kids who just wanted to get out of the, they were filling out a questionnaire. Maybe they just wanted to get out the door quickly and didn't read the question. I don't know.
Well, I think just makes me think of when you have to do when you have to do the sur sheets on your professors at the end of the term. All you want to do is fill those out and get out. I don't think most people even evaluate the questions as they're filling them out too much.
Well, how do you? You know, this interview is more difficult for me because you are very optimistic and you seem clear about what you want. I don't see any flaws. I'm not asking you to bare your soul, but what are there any trouble areas here? Are there any flies in the ointment, so to speak? I know you're an optimist, and I know you don't dwell on those things which are going to drag you down. But I mean, you're going to go out into the crass commercial world pretty soon. You're going to have problems anywhere?
I worry too much about what other people think of me and of other things, and I get caught up in that. And I know that's something I have to work on because I can't worry about that for my whole life. And I'm getting better about it, but getting caught up in what everybody always thinks all the time. I would get nowhere if I worried about that all the time. So it's something I'm having to work on.
Could I say that what you're saying is your opinion of yourself counts less than the opinions others have of you?
That might be so. But that's something I'm working on, and I feel that things that used to bother me before don't anymore. And I'm glad about that, you know. And I think that I'm starting to do things more for me than for other people now, as I'm getting older. And that's something I had to work on too, because all my life I've been doing things for other people too.
But that fits into what you want to do with your life, which is to help other people.
Well, to teach, but I like teaching. I may change, I don't know, but I'm happy with it right now. And when you're asking what other things are, and that's one of the things. I don't know if I'm going to definitely like what I'm going into. I don't know for sure. But you get to a point where you have to make a decision, and that's where I had to make my decision, or I'd be here forever going to school.
But once you get out there, you can still go back to school. You can still change your vocation, although it becomes more and more difficult
as you go older
and more set in your ways and all those things, and more tied down with more responsibility. I mean, once you get married and have kids, then and you lose some of this marvelous freedom, right?
Oh, I know. That's what everybody says. They tell you to do all these impulsive things while you're young and before you're tied down. I think that's true.
Would you like to travel?
I love to travel. I've done some, and I would love to do more. I think that's one of the other reasons why I like to go in the Peace Corps, just to go someplace different and really experience different things. That's something I really like to do, is just do different things. I think to go to a different country and to live that life for a little while, to me, is great. Would be great, I think.
Where would you like to go? And what would you do?
Go to, India or Africa. And I don't want to be stuck out in some village by myself with all these tribes. That would scare me. But if I was to do something like that, I'd want to go with other people. But I don't know. I don't want to go out and try to convert people into Christianity or anything like that. But I think I'd like to go out and, oh, I don't know, maybe even do something like, I don't know. I know in the Peace Corps you do all different kinds of things. I don't know for sure what I'd like to
do. Hard physical work? Would you like to dig wells for the local village? Or
I don't know specifically.
Do basic house framing for a school building in Zimbabwe? Or
I don't know if that's specifically what I want to do, but I think I'd do it.
But Peace Corps are usually looking for people who are specialists in some area who can make a very specific contribution. I mean, you could teach English or mm-hmm. something, but their needs are so basic that unless you have a particular skill, your chances are not as great as they would be otherwise.
It's probably something I won't do because I know right now 2 years seems like a long time to out of my life. I know later I'll look back and think that 2 years is nothing, but right now it seems like a lot, especially out of college. You know, I sort of feel like...
Do you want to go live in a big city?
I don't think so.
Experience that?
I like cities to visit, but I don't think I want to live in one. Maybe the first couple of years, but I don't think I'd want to live permanently in a city.
Yeah. It's over on page 6, number 6. It's the... it all ties in not only with the younger generation's need to see an immediate result, but also with this concept of the me generation. The journalists are talking about the focus that current students put on themselves, making a lot of money, getting the appropriate job. And they compare this generation to what the kids were doing back in the 60s, who were marching for civil rights, who were opposing the war in Vietnam and so forth, almost as if they were saying that there has really been a major shift in the goals here. And do you think that's accurate? Do you think that most of your contemporaries and peers are only interested in focusing on material things? They're very selfish, et cetera, et cetera.
Well, I think that most people, when they're getting out of school right now, I think that you're thinking the idea of getting a good salary is so important to people. And I know a lot of all my roommates are seniors, and a couple of them are looking into companies that they don't even like, but they pay well.
And what fields?
In business, especially. And business is so big right now. I think that that's why a lot of people are even going into businesses for money. I do think that that's a primary goal for a lot of students right now.
Money. So are you saying that this description of the me generation is accurate?
Yes, I think so. I think it probably is kind of sad, but I think so.
Are you saying that students are less idealistic now than in the 1960s?
Idealistic as in?
As well, they were espousing all sorts of noble causes like civil rights, stopping the war. And
mm-hmm. Oh yeah, I think so. I think definitely so. I don't think most people are even aware of what exactly is going on politically or in other countries. I know they used to be then. I'm not aware as I'd like to be. But I don't think most of us, I mean, people didn't even vote. Most of the people I didn't know that I know in school did not even vote. And that bothered me a lot.
Did you vote?
Mm-hmm.
Well, you don't fall into the great mass of the me generation then. Because you have told me, among other things, that you're not interested in making a lot of money, that you're interested in helping people, and that your satisfaction really comes from that. And you don't fit the stereotype of a member of the me generation.
Well, I'd like to, I mean, I don't look to make this huge salary, but if someday that I have enough money that I'd be very comfortable, that would be nice. But that's not my main concern, no. But I think this is right, though, that for the fast, that the world is, you know, you're searching for fast gratification. And I mean, I find myself doing the same thing. You know, you go to a restaurant and you get irate that you're not being waited on. You know, what are these people doing? You know, because you get used to going out and just being served immediately. Like this restaurant is just an example.
Do you think we as a nation are at fault on that score, that the Asiatics, the people of the Far East, the Japanese, for example, are much more inclined to delay their gratification, to work harder, to be more disciplined?
Oh, definitely. I mean, the work ethic is so different, like say in Japan, than here. People love their company and their jobs, and people here hate their jobs, and they see their employers as an enemy rather than adversary. You know, I definitely think that's the case.
Yeah, what is the ultimate? How would you answer that? What is the ultimate fear of most of us?
I think it's to fail. There's so many ways to fail. You know, failing as in the work field, failing as a parent, failing as a spouse. That scares me, not as failing, you know, worrying about not being good at what I'd like to be good at, not being a good mother or something like that.
Which of those areas are highest on the priority list?
I think to me, family would be most important. I think for me, I'd want to be a good mother and a good wife. I'd like to be good in my profession too, but I think family is to me most important.
That really, though, is a represents a special conflict that women seem to have, because they want to be accepted on a professional level, many of them. At the same time, they want to achieve what you just described, which is to be the prime nourisher of a family, mm-hmm. of the children, etc.
I think women, but see, then women, I think in your mind you're thinking, well, hopefully the man I marry is going to be successful too. You know, and you kind of, in a sense, I think you sort of feel like maybe you can fall back on them in a way. Not that you're solely depending on them financially or whatever.
All right. You're married, you have the two kids, and the husband says, look, I'm making my $50,000 a year. You stay home, take care of the kids. Is it going to bother you a little bit?
That would bother me. That I'd be expected to stay home and just raise a family and have a and take care of the house. I think that that's a job in itself, and if that's what somebody wants to do, then that's fine. But I know that I'm not wouldn't just be satisfied doing just that. So I wouldn't like that. And it wouldn't be financially. It wouldn't be that I'm thinking, well, I can't contribute my $25,000 a year so we could have a better income. That's not what I would. I mean, sometimes I think I'd be thinking that'd be nice to make the extra $25,000 or whatever. But I think I would just like to be doing more. I mean, I always like to be busy myself. So I think that would be a reason why, too.
Yeah. Talk a little about your roommates and other people you've known as friends and what some of their aspirations have been. I mean, you mentioned in passing a couple of your roommates as concentrating on business. And do you feel that the focus of some of these friends of yours is really that much different than yours, or can you talk about that?
Sure. Well, I could talk.
Just tell me what they're doing. You know?
Okay. One of my roommates that I have now, she is completely materialistic. She admits it. She said, I'm one of the most selfish, materialistic people I know. I like her a lot. She's a very nice person, but she would go for the biggest salary. She never wants to have children because she doesn't want to, financially, she doesn't want to have the drain, or she doesn't emotionally or physically want to have the drain of having children. She that is her idea of happiness, is materialistic. Living in a nice house, driving a nice car, dressing beautifully, and going and being able to do whatever you want all the time. That is her idea of happiness.
But you said she was a very nice person.
She is. To be around. I like to be around her.
She's in business.
Mm-hmm. Well, in a form of business. She's in merchandising management, which is like a tie between kind of a clothing merchandising.
But the work itself, does she enjoy that, or will she enjoy that, do you think? So you
describe
it solely as her job as a means towards this materialistic level.
Mm-hmm.
And what I'm asking now is, isn't there anything in the game itself, the merchandising itself, which is attractive to her?
She loves clothes and dressing and putting outfits together. And I think that in her, that's her creativity. That's where her creativity comes out. So that's what she thoroughly enjoys doing.
But now, if I sat down with her and asked her this question about materialism and so forth, would she describe herself in the terms that you've described her?
She would tell you that she thinks about making a high salary. She would tell you, she and her boyfriend sit down and they, as for recreation, they try to decide how much money they're going to make and what they'd spend it on. So I think, and she's very honest about that, so she probably would. And then I've got another roommate who, another one's in business, and she'd like to make lots of money, but she also wants to get married and have kids and live happily ever after. But she would very much like to have a lot of money. I mean, I think everybody would. I don't think there's anybody that would not like to make a lot of money.
I'm right there, too.
Because we believe that being, I think that's thought of as being that if you're set financially, then you think you're going to be happy. You know, I think everybody hopes that at least.
Right.
Can you describe the your hometown physically? You know, the layout, the street you grew up on, the general setting. To sort of close your eyes and in your mind's eye, see these things and tell me what, whether you lived in a house or an apartment or...
I lived in a house, and my house is in a very historical area of Connecticut. It's right down the road from a historical grist mill. It's a museum. We live on a dirt road with only 5 houses around us, so we're spread out from our neighbors. And a lot of trees. We're in the trees mainly. It's beautiful. There's trees everywhere. It's green and lush in the spring and the summer. It's pretty in the winter, right by a river. As I get older, I appreciate it more. As younger, there weren't enough kids, I felt, to play with growing up.
When's the first time you ever went and visited a ghetto?
When I was, it was my first year of high school, and we went to New York City to see a play, and we drove through Harlem, and I saw it then.
Your reaction?
It was awful. Terrible. I couldn't believe it. These lots full of garbage and wrecked cars, stripped down cars, and people, I don't know, you see it like on TV, but I had never, seeing it myself was so much different. I thought it was awful.
What is your feeling about a society which somehow
allows for that?
Yeah.
It bothers me. I think it's really sad. I know a lot of people think, oh, well, we've got it, you know, we live in a country where if you really want it, you can get it, you know, you can work your way up and become established and... But I don't know if that's true or not. I think there should be some way of providing, but yet I don't know if welfare or things like that are the answer. I'm not sure. It bothers me, though.
So you don't believe that everyone has...
equal
you
opportunity?
You certainly don't believe that everyone has an equal opportunity.
Oh, no.
And simply with the right attitude that you can go to the top.
Some can, but I don't think that everybody can. I mean, even if you're growing up in that kind of atmosphere, how do you get the right attitude if that's what surrounds you?
Do you see yourself as privileged then?
Sometimes, sometimes not. I do compared to them, and then other times I don't. I mean,
other times.
Overall, when you see people who have always gotten what they wanted, I think you know, they are really lucky. And other times I think I don't think they could get through anything really hard on their own if they had to. And then I feel privileged that maybe I'm a stronger person than they are.
What's the roughest problem you've ever wrestled with?
Dealing with my father's death and then having to take on a lot of responsibility, you know. And, yeah, that was...
Yeah, that's a big one.
Mm-hmm.
That's a big one.